Let me tell you a story, podcast number 139.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Call me Ishmael.
It was the age of wisdom.
Some years ago. Never mind.
It is a truth universally acknowledged.
You don't know about me without you.
Welcome to Let Me Tell You a Story with your hosts, Steve and Becky Lyles. Settle back into your seat, step onto your favorite fitness machine, or lace up your walking shoes, and enjoy stories from a variety of genres and authors.
Hi, this is Steve.
Hi, this is Becky. Welcome to Let Me Tell You a Story. Our guest today is Bob West, a man who has an interesting history with a certain governmental agency. His sweet, lovely wife, Alaysia, accompanied him to our living room studio, and we're happy to have them both with us.
Hi, this is Bob West. I spent 26 years in the U.S. Secret Service and traveled all over the world to about 50 countries.
Oh, okay.
And had a very exciting career. It was well worth it. And I retired in 1998 with 26 years of service and 1 year of sick leave. So I retired on 27 years.
Wow. Very cool. Well, we have lots of questions for you.
Yeah, I'm going to pick your brain.
Fire away.
How did you get involved with the Secret Service?
Well, when I went to college, I went to San Jose State to play football and lasted the fall semester, but I tore my shoulder out that had been previously injured and went to the Chargers, San Diego Chargers orthopedic surgeon, and he said, it's not repairable. And if you get it repaired and tear it out again, you may lose the use of your arm. If you were my son, I would say your football days are over. So my football days were over. And I was a police science major.
Oh.
So anyway, I stayed in school and went on and then decided to work some part-time work and then started working full-time and kind of dropped out of school for a while and then continued my education and moved down to San Diego and finished my degree at San Diego State University. And I was...
The same degree?
No, I had a degree. I had a triple major of economics, psychology, and business management.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
And I had been working for Sears, and I could see the handwriting on the wall that there was going to be strict competition. And, of course, now Sears is no longer viable. So That's when Kmart first started.
Wow.
So I had to, look for a new career. And I had, because I wasn't carrying enough units, my draft board revoked my student deferment. Oh. And I had made arrangements after I got my notice that they were going to do that to sign up for the National Guard. And as soon as they said they were going to revoke it, I went down and signed up for the National Guard. And they had a infantry battalion and had an explosive ordnance detachment to that battalion. So I signed up to be a explosive ordnance technician, and I went through basic training in Fort Polk, Louisiana, and got my orders for the next phase after basic training, and they were going to send me to Fort Sam Houston to be a medic. And I went into the company commander and I said, I was supposed to go to explosive ordnance school in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. And he pulled my file out and he looked at it and he says, well, you're too smart to blow stuff up. They need smart people to be medics. So that's why you're going to be a medic. So I was trained as a medic. And that was kind of funny and kind of fortuitous. So anyway, I moved to San Diego and finished my degree in San Diego. And with my medical training, I thought, well, I had been done sales with Sears Roebuck, and I thought, well, that would be a good career as a you know, and being a drug detail man, or you go around to the doctors with a medical background and get them to use your company's drugs. And Alicia told me that I probably wouldn't like that, and she was right, I didn't. So then I started looking around to get other jobs, and with some of my police science background, my brother at the time was an FBI agent, so he said, you know, check out the FBI, you're smart enough, you can pass the test. And so I, you know, signed up to take their test, and they called me and said that they had a hiring freeze on, so they weren't testing. And I went back to San Diego State and went to the placement center, and the Secret Service was going to interview. So I decided to study up on the Secret Service, which I did, and it looked like an exciting career. So I signed up for an interview, and then I got a call from the special agent in charge in San Diego, and he said, you were the only one that signed up, so why don't you just come into the office? And I had done a lot of travel on my own as a private citizen. So anyway, they liked that because I'd been overseas and done stuff. I interviewed and filled out all the paperwork, and then about 2 months later, they started my background investigation, and one of the agents in the office did most of the investigation since I was living in San Diego and interviewed a lot of our friends and acquaintances and that sort of thing. And so in the meantime, though, San Diego Police Department was hiring, and I went in and told them that I had applied for the Secret Service, but there was a federal hiring freeze on, which there was. And he said, well, you're the kind of guy we want, so we hope we can get you. So I started in the academy, which gave me great experience. I work in the street because you do 2 weeks in the academy, and then you do 2 weeks in the field. So I kept doing that, and then finally in May, I started in the 1st of March, and then in May, I got a call from the special agent in charge and says, your appointment to the Secret Service has been approved. Can you start May 30th? And so I said, I'll be there. So that started my career in the Secret Service.
So you're married?
I was married, yeah.
Do you have a family?
Yeah. I had a family. Alicia and I met in 1953. I was 10 and she was 9. And we met at the Hotel Del in Coronado at the ping pong table by the at the swimming pool down there.
Impressed you remember.
Oh, yes.
Well, our fathers were fraternity brothers in college at Colorado School of Mines. And her, as was her father. And my father was a geophysicist, and her father was a metallurgical engineer. So they kept in contact over the years.
And oh, fun.
So that started our romance.
With ping pong.
It'll be 70 years in this coming Labor Day.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, so anyway.
But you didn't marry quite then,
no,
right?
We didn't marry then. There weren't, you know, child brides were prohibited in those days. But, you know, we got together after she graduated from college and came to do graduate school at San Diego State, where I was. But our families had remained friends all over the years. I started my training in... It was kind of on-the-job training until there was space to go to training in Washington, D.C. I went to Washington, D.C. for 8 weeks and then came back. And then went. That was just for the Treasury Enforcement Agent School. After about a month, I went back to Washington, D.C. to the Secret Service Training Academy. Mm. Those were both 8 weeks long. Mm. I did that and then came back and worked in San Diego. Worked criminal cases with counterfeiting, forgery of government, you know, checks and bonds.
Oh.
So that was with the Secret Service?
Yeah,
in
gold violations. That's what it was with the Secret Service. That's what we did. And then, of course, we had the protection. So when Nixon had the White House, you know, the Western White House in San Clemente, California. So if he came out there, we would go up to support the presidential detail.
Oh, okay.
Or if there was a foreign dignitary, we protected foreign head of state from foreign countries that come to the United States.
Oh.
So we were pretty busy.
And you said you traveled quite a bit.
Yeah, I traveled all over the country. And then there'd be a foreign trip, and then they'd fly agents all over the world for foreign trips. Hmm.
So it wasn't just with the president?
No, it was president, vice president. The head of the state for a foreign country would come. You know, like Queen Elizabeth, I did two tours of duty with her. Oh, fun. I did one tour with Mohammad Najibullah, who was the president of Afghanistan when the Russians were there. Oh. And just kings and queens and prime ministers and that sort of thing.
All those people.
All those guys, yeah. So it was interesting to do that. And then in 1976, we had the head of the Secret Service Investigations Division came, and I said, I heard there's going to be some transfers to D.C. And he said, oh, no, those are all taken care of. You're probably safe. Well, he didn't know, but my name was on the list to be transferred.
Oh.
So we got transferred, and I was there, you know, for 3 years.
So in D.C.?
At the White House.
Oh, okay. When you protect, is that the word, the White House? What is your day-to-day?
Well, there's, you know, the president's protected 24 hours a day. So there's three shifts, and the shifts rotate. So you're 2 weeks on one shift, you know, 8 to 4, and then you rotate to midnights, and then you rotate to 4 to 12, and then 8 to 4. And
that's got to be hard to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We lived in Virginia, in Western Virginia, near Washington, D.C. And our neighbors all thought Alicia was a single mom because they never saw me.
Oh.
So.
So I would guess you were stationed at different places, you know, not outside the president's bedroom, but on the property.
Well, you know, at the White House. And for part of my time initially in Washington, D.C., Henry Kissinger had been National Security Advisor before he was Secretary of State. As National Security Advisor, he had Secret Service protection. And then when he went to State Department, he wanted to have his Secret Service detail back. So I was there for 6 or 8 months with him. And Alicia got to meet him and stuff. And he was cordial, had a good sense of humor. And we got along great. That was fun. When Carter was elected, then I went back to the White House detail and was first assigned to Amy Carter because the president's family gets thing.
Uh-huh. Oh.
And they wanted agents who had kids to be on her detail, you know, from the White House.
Oh.
And so I was on her detail.
So for does about that mean six. Going to school with her?
Going, taking her to school, taking her, you know, we went one time down to Plains, we drove. And drove down and spent the night, you know, on the way. And as we would go down, we would get support from the other field offices that are all strung along the East Coast.
Okay. So there are Secret Service all over the country?
Yeah, I forget how many offices there are now, but all major cities have a Secret Service office.
Hmm.
You know, Idaho just has one. California's got, I think they've got 4, plus some resident agencies. Boise was a resident agency out of Salt Lake City.
Hmm.
So I spent 3 years there, and in 79 we came back to California, to San Francisco, and that's, you know, you go where they send you.
Yeah.
You know. I'd been in the Garden Spot in San Diego, but I grew up there, you know, so that was great. But San Francisco was different. We lived in the East Bay, and so I had to commute every day and work counterfeiting, check fraud cases. Intelligence. I did a lot of intelligence work there. And then you'd be pulled out of the field office to go on temporary assignments, either overseas or around the country. And the campaign years were especially busy.
Oh, yeah.
So, because in 76, I was in charge of President Reagan's residence when he was running against Ford the first time. And then the next time I was on his detail, because I had just come off the White House driving the armored limousines. So I drove him all over during that campaign.
Oh, wow.
And they wanted me to come back to D.C. to drive again, and I told them I wasn't ready to do that, you know. Fortunately, I didn't have to go. So that was good. So I stayed in San Francisco. We'd get called out periodically for details and that sort of thing. And work criminal cases, got related to the money supply and counterfeiting, forgery of government checks and bonds, threats against the president. And then do protection assignments out, doing advances all over the country, especially during campaign years. Well, I was going on and on and on, and my brother retired from federal service, and he said, "You're about ready to retire, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, why don't you think about going to L.A. for a year? Because your retirement's based on your high year."
Oh.
So I said, "Well, I could go to L.A. and work there." And a friend of mine was the special agent in charge in L.A., so I put in to go there, and in June of 96, I got transferred there in the spring of 97, and then worked there, and as it happened, Alicia's father passed away after I was there for 2 months, and I lived with her mother, so that was fortunate. Otherwise, somebody would have had to, you know, Alicia would have had to go down or something. And so I worked there and was in charge of herding the young agents, and our the first case I worked with them, they were going to do a raid on an apartment on Wilshire Boulevard in a big high-rise 15-story apartment building. And we walk up to the building, and one of the guys is carrying this kinetic battering ram. And I said, "What are you going to use that for?" And he said, "Well, if they don't answer the door, we'll just break it down." And I said, "You know, this isn't a shanty apartment house. This is a real high-class, high-end apartment house. If you damage the door, we'll end up spending a couple $1,000s to repair it." So let me show you how you do this. So we walk into the manager's office, identified ourselves, showed him a copy of the search warrant, asked for a key to the apartment, went up, knocked on the door, knock, 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 no answer, knock, 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 stick the key in, open the door, walk in. The guy isn't there. They would have broken the door down.
Oh, wow.
Destroyed it.
Yeah.
So then another supervisor came out to see how the search was going, and we went inside and looked around and stuff, and I looked outside and I said, "There's nobody out here watching the door." So I told him, "Bring somebody out here to watch the outside. If you need any help, we can help you with identifying what you need to take." Well, as soon as we walked back outside and walked down, we were walking down the hall, the elevator rings, a guy walks out, walks down the hall. It's the bad guy. It's his apartment.
Oh.
So they hustled him in there, and they started interviewing him and stuff. And then one of them showed me a document. He said, "What is this?" Well, what it was, he was Egyptian, and it was a permit from the Egyptian government to be out of the country. If you didn't have that permit when you went back into Egypt, you immediately went in the military.
Oh.
So that was like gold to him.
Yes.
So, you know, that worked out great. So I stayed there until June of 98, and that's when I retired.
Nice. And you were counting minutes at the end, probably.
Yeah, at the end.
Yeah.
I'd had some health issues.
Uh-huh.
So you were ready.
I was ready to go, and Lacey was ready to have me home.
I would like to know what your most exciting experience was in all those years.
Well, the most dangerous one was going after the biker gangs for counterfeit money.
Oh.
You know, they wouldn't hesitate to shoot you. Mm. Yeah, so you had to be very careful with that. And being with some of the people was interesting, you know, some of the world leaders. I did two tours with Queen Elizabeth, and she was, you know, very pomp and circumstance, you know, type
very,
of.
Very proper.
Very proper, and every morning she'd walk out the door in her house coat, and all the ladies in waiting and whatever they call the men would show up, and they'd go, "Good morning, Your Majesty," and she'd go, "Good morning, good morning, good morning." That was kind of fun. And some of them were notorious. Mohammad Najibullah, who was assassinated by the Taliban in Afghanistan when the Russians left. I was on his detail, and he was very cordial and stuff.
Do you have any favorites?
A favorite president, Reagan, head and shoulders above everybody else.
Really?
Yeah, he was a very nice man, a strong Christian. He'd read his mail to us, and somebody quotes scripture, and he goes, that's not, you know, Thessalonians 4:6, that's Colossians 5:8, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
So he knew the Bible forward and backward. He was, a lot of people didn't, you know, they just didn't like him. But I always said, if a guy could be the head of the Screen Actors Guild and keep all those people, it's like herding cats to have those group of people under you. So, but he was very nice. I did two tours with him, once in 76 and then once in 79. Very nice man. Never heard him curse or anything else. We'd go on a campaign trail and he'd go talk to the billionaires club, and then he'd go and talk to the steel workers and relate with them and joke with them and all kinds of stuff. Amazing man.
Yeah.
And I did have, for Canadian friends, I had a detail with Pierre and Margaret Trudeau. Mm. They went to a resort in Hawaii, and I went as a rescue diver.
Wow.
And there was talk that he would scuba dive. Well, he didn't scuba dive, but he and Margaret had their little, Justin Trudeau, who's now the Prime Minister of Canada, was there sitting on the sand. So when the detail went down, walking down the beach, the other rescue diver and I sat down and kept an eye on Justin Trudeau. You know? And he walked down into the water and a rogue wave came and knocked him over and started dragging him out. And I ran out and grabbed him and picked him up. And, you know, I'm sure he wouldn't have drowned, but that was...
Wow. Wouldn't have looked good, though.
Would not have looked good, no. We would have been in deep trouble.
Yes.
Even though he technically wasn't a protectee. But. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
But we flew a lot of places. We took a... We always flew around the world in C-141s. And we were in a trip to Africa, and we're on our way back from Kenya to Tarragona, Spain, and then we'd refuel and then fly back to the United States, and we'd had this air crew with us for about a month. We got to know them real well, and they stayed where we stayed rather than military hotels and that kind of stuff. I had taken some flight lessons, and I talked about flying and how it is to fly, and the pilots said, well, when we get to Alexandria, Egypt, you come on up. You can fly the plane up the Mediterranean. You know, you just sit there, basically. And he said, when we get a course correction, he said, now, there's a dial here. Just turn it very, very slowly to the new heading, and the plane will automatically take that new heading and stuff. So we're flying along, and we had been flying for about an hour, and the radio came on, and it was the next air traffic control station said, take a new heading of such and such. So I just reached, and he said, looked at me, and he goes, you know, says, I reached for the dial, and I went, whoop, a little too fast, and the plane banked and went like that. And then the pilot came on the intercom and said, oh, sorry for that quick change of direction. Agent West has been flying the plane. And everybody in the back started yelling, get him out of there. We're going to crash. So that was kind of funny. That was a lot of fun.
So they said the biker gangs were dangerous.
They were always armed.
Oh, okay. Was your scariest experience with them or with...
No, the scariest experience I had was with Henry Kissinger. We protected him when he was Secretary of State. And we went to the inauguration of Lopez Portillo. And at the same time, we had an alert that there were two Belgian mercenaries that had been hired to whack him.
Oh.
And so we were at the inauguration. So you're kind of on edge, you know.
Yeah.
And we had our armored car there as close to the building as we could get. And we were inside. And then when it came time to leave, the police had not kept the crowd back from where the car was. So we had to literally wade through the crowd.
Oh.
And so the detail leader said, Bob, you take the point, loosen your belt, and we'll surround him holding onto your belt and his belt.
Whoa.
And an agent in back. So the five of us pushed with me in the lead, moving people aside, got back to the car with no hassle. But that was probably the scariest encounter, because anything could have happened. It was wall-to-wall people, just pandemonium. Because all the head of states were coming through that area there.
Wow.
And the Mexican police didn't keep it clear like they promised, So.
Wow. So were you in Mexico City?
Yeah.
That alone. I mean, we've been there, That alone could have some
danger
to it.
Different memorable times. When Carter went to Israel one time, we stayed at the King David Hotel that overlooks the old city. We went to a dinner at the Knesset in the armor. We always took our armored cars with us. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was driving the armored car. And that night, we went to the Knesset, and they had changed the road designation so we could kind of avoid any kind of traffic. But the only thing they did there was a turn from the Avenue of the Cedars onto the road that went up to the Knesset. And it was a tight corner. And as they told all the soldiers, do not turn around and salute the president's limousine. You watch the crowd. Well, some guy decided he was going to turn around and salute. As he turned around, a guy in a big heavy fatigue jacket ran past him at the limousine, and I took the wheel and spun the wheel and hit him with the front of the car and knocked him back into the crowd.
Oh.
And that was the least of his worries, because all the soldiers rushed on him and started giving him a butt stroke with their rifles and stuff.
Oh, my.
And Menachem Begin said, look at that crazy guy. He's trying to jump underneath the car. And that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Of course, the press was several cars back. They never even saw it.
They missed the fun.
Yeah, so that was kind of fun. And we had an Israeli security guy in the front seat, and he was very upset that I had hit an Israeli citizen with the limousine. And there was a gentleman his last name was Rotem. And he was a big red-headed Israeli security guy. He got out of the car and started speaking in Hebrew and pointing to me, and he said, hold it. I know Mr. West. I've worked with him before. He did exactly what he should have done. That's what he's trained to do, is protect the president.
Mm.
And then that ended it.
So, wow, you have an amazing memory.
Yeah.
Names and streets in other countries.
I remember one time in Africa calling Alicia, and she said, oh, you're home already. And I said, no, I'm in the middle of Africa. Well, how come the phone's so clear? Because they moved a satellite.
Uh-huh.
Just be thankful we don't have to pay for a call, because it'd probably be about $800 a minute.
So you did have some communication, but
sometimes
kind of rough
call.
To be separated so right. much. Are there any secrets that you still have to keep secret?
Well, I just don't talk about them, if it was classified information.
Yeah. So once you're done, you don't just go out blabbing.
Yeah, you don't write a book about all the secrets you knew about and where stuff is, and a lot of it is relocation sites where you would go if something happened and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's just stuff that you don't talk about. And, secrets are secrets.
Forever.
Yeah, lips are sealed.
Until they're declassified.
But you don't know what's declassified, so you just don't talk about it. And there's, everybody thinks, well, there's top secrets at the top, but it goes at the top, but it goes out to the side, and they have all kinds of different designations.
Mm-hmm. in your training, initial training, you were taught to observe. Do you still, how many people in the room, what are they wearing? Is this person coming too fast? Or a cop told me one time, a cop friend, he said, I have an easily recognizable face in a lineup. I don't know if that's an insult or a compliment.
Yeah.
So do you still look at people from a law enforcement angle?
Oh, probably. You know, you did it for that long, you know. But I dealt with a lot of mentally ill people over the years because some of the people who make threats are mentally ill. Mm. And I had one case when I was in San Diego that he thought he was Jesus Christ. And he was really sick, but he'd get thrown in jail and do stuff. But under the California Health and Safety Code, as a law enforcement officer, you could commit someone to the mental hospital. And I committed Richard to the hospital. Mm. And most time they just, get in a fight with him and take him to jail and stuff. But I took him to the mental health facility. Just before I transferred from San Diego to Washington, D.C., I was in a big sporting goods store and somebody came up and tapped me on the shoulder and I turned around and that was Richard. Mm-hmm. And he said, I never got to thank you, Mr. West, but you were the only one that helped me and got me help.
Oh, wow.
And now I haven't worked for 25 years and now I have a job here selling sporting goods and loving it and on medication. I'm doing great and I just wanted to thank you.
Oh, wow.
So then I had another one when I was in San Francisco because I worked a lot of intelligence cases there. My secretary called and said, there's a gentleman to see you here, and he's got his whole family with him. And I remembered his name. I said, well, put him in the conference room, and I'll be in a minute. I've got something I got to take care of. So he took him, the family, in the conference room and went in there, and he was there with his wife and three kids. And he said, I just wanted to thank you for taking the time to get me help, because nobody did. They just locked me up in jail. And then I was tormented by the, prisoners in the jail.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of gratifying. At least you did some good,
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that was interesting. Well, Alicia got, when I was assigned to Henry Kissinger, Alicia, he had a Christmas party for us. So Alicia got to meet him, and he went to the International Horse Show. It was a jumping contest that they call Poussance, where the horses jump over like an 8-foot fence, wall.
Mm-hmm.
And she got to go with that, and he sat across from where we were and stuff. But at the Christmas party, she mentioned that he had seen that, and he was very cordial, and she really enjoyed meeting him.
Didn't he, like Reagan, have a good sense of humor?
And oh, yeah.
Reagan told jokes all the time.
Yeah.
You can still see those on YouTube. I don't know about Kissinger, though.
Yeah, he'd joke with us. And he'd be giving a briefing to all these brainiac guys from Harvard and all the big schools back east, international relations. And he'd get upset with them about something, and then he'd say, I'm going to fire all you and have my agents take your jobs. They know more than you do.
Oh.
They give me better advice than you do. But he was funny. And we had a time we were in Mexico over Christmas. And he would come out. We had a post out in the patio behind this house. And he'd come out and take a swim. Well, when he came out and took a swim, we'd move from the patio out to another table we have. And so we had a Uzi submachine gun. It was in a briefcase with the top open. And then we had the Mexican army on a perimeter around us. And he came out one morning to swim and he said, Agent West, it looks like you have a lot of equipment there. I hope you know how to use it all. And just that time I slammed the briefcase with the Uzi in it. And I said, this is the only thing that I really have to know how to use, and if I need it, you better hope I do. And he goes, oh, very funny. He had a good sense of humor.
When you say you did intelligence or you were doing intelligence, what does that entail?
We get tips on people who had made threats and that sort of thing. Or if we were, run people's names at if there was going to be an event somewhere to make sure they were not wanted criminals and that kind mm-hmm. of stuff.
So was it more computer work than anything?
Yeah, we interview people if necessary, but mostly mm-hmm. just collecting the names and running them through mm-hmm. NCIC and our sources in Washington. Mm.
Do you have any surprises?
Not really. Mm. I had a young man that was in San Diego that said he wanted to talk to the president. And I ran his name and stuff, and he didn't come up. And he said, I'm going to Washington. I'm going to see if I can see him. I said, you won't be able to. Sure enough, he stood in the rain outside the White House, and finally one of the uniformed division guards went out and got his name and ran the name and saw that I had, said he was coming. He wasn't a threat or anything. He just wanted to talk to the president. Nice kid,
Oh, okay.
But he wasn't a threat,
Yeah. Just that not anybody can talk to the president.
Yes. He doesn't like walking his dog or something like that. Doesn't do that.
Interesting.
You had to qualify every month. And then once a quarter, we had to go out and qualify with the submachine guns and shotguns and mm-hmm. handguns. A lot of bullets fired over the years.
Yeah, with the machine guns.
Yeah, I never failed to qualify as expert, so. But I grew up with guns, so.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Did you ever get to eat in the White House?
Oh, yeah.
White kitchen or whatever?
When I was on Amy's detail, the White House kitchen was right there. And we got to know the night posh washer. It was a guy named Frankie. If there's less stuff left over, he'd bring it in, if we were working 4-to-12 shift, that sort of thing. A lot of times you get stuff. And at a Christmas party we had at the White House, you had canapes and that sort of thing. But there was a Navy mess in the West Wing, and we could eat there.
Oh.
So, but we wouldn't sit down and eat dinner at the White House
with the family.
If they had a party or with the family and stuff. Yeah. But I was on Amy for, about 6-8 months. And when I was on her detail, if we took a trip, she'd eat with us.
Was she comfortable with
you
guys?
Oh, yeah. Huh. I used to tease her and stuff. But I had kids that were just about her age.
How old was she then?
Oh, she was probably 8 or 9.
Oh.
No. Fun age to tease.
Yeah. So, and she had a maid that went everywhere with her. Mary was her name.
Oh, my. What a life.
Yeah.
She'd been in the governor's office when Carter was governor.
Uh-huh.
So she knew that Amy went for it when she was from a baby. I think I was musing about it the other day, and there were 3 or 4 people, foreign leaders, that I had done stuff with that ended up getting assassinated or in their own country, not here.
Yeah, it must be interesting for you to follow the news or even just...
You hear conversations between the people that, you're protecting and don't talk about those things,
Yeah. So they get comfortable enough that they...
Oh, yeah, it's like you're not there,
You're invisible.
Yeah.
And you try to be
invisible,
yeah.
Yeah. Talk about the local news with them or that sort of thing.
The days before TikTok and Twitter.
Oh, yeah, that was the day before cell phones. We had radio telephones that we used. And they were a big, heavy thing that you carried around.
But, like Get Smart?
Yeah, kind of. No, I didn't have a shoe phone. No, that was before the days of cell phones, now.
I remember those. You're talking about the brick phones? I remember.
They were heavy.
They were obnoxious, too.
Yeah.
And
half the time they wouldn't work.
Must have been battery powered.
Yeah, they had a bat. Yeah. That's the weight.
Oh,
it was
okay.
all the all the battery packs for them and stuff. Yeah, he didn't want to use those and stuff. But all our cars had radios in them and stuff. So.
So you've seen some history.
Oh, yeah. I was assigned when Richard Nixon was in the hospital in Long Beach, California with his phlebitis.
Yeah.
You remember that? I remember that. And I was assigned to Pat Nixon then because he was out of office. And so I went up there with Tricia and Julie and Mrs. Nixon to the hospital. And we went up into the parking garage. And as we went through and walked out on the floor where he was, all the press was there to snap pictures of the girls and Mrs. Nixon. And I was, you know, right with her then. And that picture was all over the paper, newspapers all over the world. A friend of mine sent one from the London Times. And then Alicia called Associated Press and told them that, you know, her husband was the agent in the picture, and they sent her an 8x10 picture that's in our hangs in our house.
Oh, fun. Yeah.
That was kind of exciting.
Yeah.
And I have pictures of all the presidents that I served with.
Good memories.
Yeah. Some good memories, some long, long, hard hours and stuff.
When Reagan was shot,
yeah,
the guy who went down.
Yeah, I knew him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but he was an agent out of Chicago. Yeah, he went down. And then the actual agent that drove the limousine was a guy I went through basic training with and was at the White House when I was. Drew Unruh was the driver of the car that day. The staff always wanted exposure. And that was a mistake. We didn't like exposure. One of the biggest people that wanted exposure was Brady, the one that ended up getting shot too and eventually passed away. But we like to make the arrival at the loading dock, you know, where we can secure the whole building.
Yeah.
And I did an advance for Teddy Kennedy when he was a candidate in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. And the staff guy got there before I did and talked to the university president about how they were going to make the arrival and stuff. And the president said, I'm not sure the Secret Service is going to do that. And I said, and I came in and he told me that what the guy wanted to do. And I said, he's going to walk through an auditorium full of students with backpacks. I don't think so. I said, it looks like there's a stage behind here. You got to have an entrance to the back. He said, oh, yeah, it's a great entrance. And we looked at it, and I said, this is the way we're coming in. So then the staff guy came, and I said, what were your thoughts on the arrival? And he said, well, we'll pull up right in front. There'll be a big crowd of students there, and then we'll kind of walk through the students to the stage and go up on the stage. I said, let me show you a better way. Walk around the back. We're going to pull in here. There's room for the whole motorcade to be in there. There's a door there that goes right up to the stage. There's a steel railing that goes up to the stage so people can't climb over it or anything. And he'll be secure. And he doesn't want to walk through a crowd and be manhandled by the students. Because they find out, even shaking hands, their hand feels like it's been squeezed in a vise. They have a sore hand and everything after they're shaking hands. You know, we teach them just to don't grab a hand, just touch it like that. Like hold your hand out. They just go like that. Don't grip.
Yeah.
Because they grip, they're so excited and they won't let go.
So interesting.
We teach them a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And safety stuff, you know.
So does everybody that runs for president, I'll say, do they get protection?
Not everybody. You have to be a certain level.
Okay.
You know, some guy's going to get his 40 friends to vote for him. He's not a viable candidate. Nobody even knows who he is, much less care. Yeah. You know?
So, but it's both parties.
Yeah, both parties.
Yeah. Interesting. I guess I didn't realize
they
had protection.
And that happens, you know, every 4 years. So it's
keep you really busy.
When I was in the Secret Service, was part of the Treasury Department, and we were organized in 1865, primarily for gold and counterfeit. Because in those days, there were a lot of gold coins, and people would shave the edges off the gold coins and then melt it down and then sell the gold.
Oh.
And there were counterfeit. A lot of paper currency was counterfeit. And at that time, banks could issue their own currency. So that's why the Secret Service was organized, and it was part of Treasury Department till after I retired. Mm-hmm. And then it became part of Homeland Security.
Oh, that's right. They combined all those,
right.
Those agencies.
And the FBI is still part of Justice. And DEA is part of the Drug Enforcement Administration, you know, so. Mm. But Secret Service is in the Homeland Security.
Makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. The first day on the job with Henry Kissinger, I knew the detail leader from having been on details with foreign dignitaries with him, and he said, Kissinger will try to get your goat. So you have to really stand up to him. Because there was one agent that was from Puerto Rico, and his English was okay, but not spoke with a heavy accent. Kissinger, all he had to do was look at Angel, and Angel kind of looked the other way. So he said, if he says something to you, come right back on him. I said, take the supervisor's car, go down to State Department in our office there, get the key to the elevator, open the elevator, go up and check his offices, and then come back down and keep that key with you. And when he arrives, then you'll take him up by yourself while we gather up our stuff to come up there. The only problem is that key sticks in the lock in the elevator control panel. And he'll watch to see what happens if it sticks and make some comment. They said he is not a morning person. He comes in, he's really kind of grumpy. They call me that he's coming. So I go from his office down to the basement in the State Department building. The car pulls in. I open the door. He hops out. I take him to the elevator. And when he hopped out, I said, you know, good morning, Dr. Kissinger, in a real loud voice. And he goes, we go up in the elevator, and it's a real nice elevator. It's all polished brass. And I can see in the reflection off the elevator that he's watching me to see what I do with the key because he knows it sticks. So anyway, we get up to the seventh floor. I turn the elevator off, go to pull the key out. It sticks in the door. Well, it was on a big ring. So he says, what's wrong, Agent Vest? Can't you get the key out of the lock? I just grabbed the ring and pulled the whole lock out of the wall. I said, you know how State Department is. Things here just don't work worth a damn.
Oh.
And he goes, very funny, very funny. And then I had a friend who went to, he had written a book, and the friend went to his speech. This has probably been 15, 20 years ago, long after I'd been there. Got him, he was selling his book, and he said, I have a friend who was one of your agents when you were Secretary of State. And he said, oh, really? He said, Bob West. And he goes, oh, Bob West. Well, let me autograph the book to him. So I have that book at home.
Oh, nice.
So that was kind of neat.
Fun.
But he was very personable.
And also, you brought this memorabilia,
I guess. That's my retired commission book. And if you open, that's the badge. And then that's what our commission book looked like. And you can read what it says on there. And
so is the badge on the inside?
No, the badge is on the outside cover.
Okay.
It's inset in there, but you could also clip it on your...
Oh, okay.
So we never did. Okay.
Some pretty small writing in there. It's like you have to have some trifocals for that.
Right.
Look at that young, handsome man. Look at that.
Well, that's right when I retired.
Oh, really? Oh. And then this.
That's the original badge that I carried the whole time I was in. You can see it's a little worn around the edges.
Oh. Yeah, it's pretty.
June of 98. Well, I was in a job at one company for 21 years, and that was about 22 years too long.
Yeah.
So it sounded like you had a better career choice for you.
Well, it went fast, you know, and a lot of memories, and I have a lot of friends, you know, that over the years I hear from some of them. But, you know, I'll be 80 and May, so a lot of the guys I served with have since passed away, you know.
Yeah. So. And presidents.
Yeah.
And presidents and dignitaries.
I guess Carter's still alive, yeah. And his brother Billy was a character. He was, I was with Amy in Plains, we went to Plains, Georgia on a trip, and I was with Amy, so she'd go out to Billy's house, and he had kids, and she'd play with them. And they said, be sure you lock the car when you go out there. Because that's when he had Billy Beer.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
If you don't lock the car when you get back, if you open the trunk, your car will be filled with Billy Beer.
I
never had any Billy Beer, but you know, I'm sure it wasn't the highest quality. It wasn't like Heineken or, you know. That was funny. He was a character. He was a fun guy, and his wife was real sweet too.
Oh, that's neat that you got to meet family.
Yeah, family, yeah.
This is kind of a personal question, but you said you found a lot and you built a house in Boise. Is that the house you live in now?
Yes. Galatia designed the house and had the draftsman draw the plans.
Oh.
And that's where we live now. And people say, well, you're on a saddle of some hills. Why didn't you build your house a little higher so you can see the city lights? And I said, we didn't move out to the country to look at city lights. We want to look out at the hills. Yeah. And so she designed the house so the house looks out at all the hills and stuff.
Yeah, you do have a nice view.
Yeah, it's really beautiful.
So did you have horses then?
Yeah, we had horses then.
In California? Before
yeah, Alicia had a horse. I didn't have a horse in California, but I grew up with horses.
Oh, okay.
We had a ranch when I was a kid. And, you know, I worked on the ranch and got all my mechanical skills, fixing equipment and welding and all that kind of stuff, and rode horses. Huh. And Alicia rode horses. She brought her horse down to our ranch. 2 summers, did you?
15 years old, yeah. Yeah. So when we were kids.
We were kids.
We have a picture of Bob and I on the horse with the goat. On the horse.
With the goat.
We're back.
I did see a nice picture of you two on horses, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, most of the time we've lived here.
Yeah, we had them.
We rode together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was an exciting career, and Alicia was a great mom and kept the home fires burning while I was traveling all over the world. But we've traveled a lot now after I retired, so.
That's nice, to do it together.
A lot of exciting places.
Fun.
Thanks, Bob, for sharing all about your exciting career with us and our listeners.
Well, thank you for having me tonight.
And that's all for now.
Yes, thank you. That was really fascinating and a lot of fun. And we also thank our listeners. And remember, you too have a story. Be sure to live it to the fullest.
Thank you for listening to Let Me Tell You a Story. Please email your comments, suggestions, and submissions to story@beckylyles.com. That's all for now. Tune in next time to enjoy a fresh assortment of stories on Let Me Tell You a Story.